Welcome, welcome, everybody. Awesome squads of preparedness enthusiasts. That's my new title. Hope you like it. Welcome to another mind-blowing episode of Talking Taboo with Tina, the podcast that's not your mom's average chat, okay? And if you are new here, welcome, welcome to your backup plan tribe. I'm so happy to have you. If you are returning, thank you. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to our channel. You know, I'm Tina. I'm an emergency preparedness coach and your go-to gal for turning life's unexpected plot twists into a comedy. Well, okay, maybe not so much a comedy, but wait, hold on to your hats because today's episode is quite unusual. As you can tell from the title, Unveiling the Secrets to Thriving After Loss, Homelessness, that's two, Divorce, three, and four, A Massive Stroke. I cannot believe how strong this beautiful lady is. Elma is coming to us today from New York. And trust me, you won't want to miss the roller coaster of insights, laughter, and maybe a few surprising confessions. Hit that subscribe button, grab your coffee, and let's spill the tea on preparedness. It's about to get real, ridiculously fun, and filled with unexpected twists. So let's get the party started. I'm so excited to have Elma here, and we're going to bring her on in a blink of an eye, basically.
In the blink of an eye, life can change dramatically. On our podcast, Talking Taboo with Tina, we delve into these life-altering events with celebrities, authors, and everyday people just like you. You'll also discover your backup plan app, a life organizing tool designed to prepare you for any unexpected circumstance. It's your safety net, taking the sting out of tragedy. Imagine a plan B that ensures your finances are safe, even in the worst case scenario. But it doesn't end there. Join our vibrant Facebook group for free webinars on backup planning and secure your future today.
We're back. Welcome back, everybody. Let's bring on Elma Thomas here, coming to us from New York. I'm so happy to have her here, and so will you. Welcome, Elma.
Welcome, welcome. So excited to be here on today.
I'm so excited to have you here in any shape or form.
Okay.
And I'm so happy that you're able to talk about your story. That is probably what the universe has wanted you to do. And I think that's where we're here today. So where did all this craziness story start for you?
Well, it all started in 2009, where you hear the words that no parent wants to hear. When the doctor came out to the waiting room and said, "We did all we can do," he didn't make it. And that's when my life took a turn for the worse, because in the midst of that happening, you know, he was only 18. So we don't think that we're going to bury our children. We think that our children are going to bury us. So yes, in the midst of dealing with his loss, I was dealing with the fact that I had no insurance and that I didn't want to do a GoFundMe page. And so I'm thinking of what I'm going to do, how I'm going to bury him. And I talked to one of my friends and I was telling her that as long as he had a proper funeral, that I would make payment plans with the funeral home if I had to pay them for the rest of my life. And my friends got together and decided that my loss was terrible enough, but to relive it every month or every week when you have to go make the payments to the funeral home, they were like, no, they didn't want that to happen. So they all got together, and in 2 days, they raised over $15,000.
That's amazing.
And that I had to tell the community stop giving me money. I don't want any more money. There's no amount of money that could bring my son back. So I just wanted him to have a proper burial and homegoing service. And that would be fine. The community did just that. So I tell every parent now, as soon as you have a baby, that you're not thinking about the inedible, but it can happen. So make sure you have some insurance on your children, because on top of the devastating loss of losing them, now you have to figure out how you're going to bury them. GoFundMe funds are not insurance, so they don't pay out immediately. You have to wait till people decide to give, if they decide to give. So make sure that you have some insurance. And the good thing about that is that when they don't use it, they can use it to go to college. So, you know, it's not like you're wasting money, but you're preparing for your child's future. A lot of people don't want to think about death. They don't want to talk about death, but we have to be prepared for it, because it's going to happen and we don't know when.
That's right. We know it, Bill, but we just don't know when.
Right.
And what. What do you think you could tell people about? There's so much to cope with at the time of death. Like, you're just, I always say to people, you lose your brain. Your brain's like disappears. It shuts down in such shock. And who knows when it comes back, really, because you're dealing with so much stuff. Like, what did they want? And what can I do? And it's just never ending. Financial, physical, like, what will he wear? What, like, choices, options, all these decisions to make. It's so difficult. What could you say to people to make that easier?
The one thing that I didn't have to go through is all of that because of my community support system. Everybody, one of my girlfriends, they bought his suit that he was buried in. My sister picked out the casket. It's like everything that would take, you know, would take energy, people did for me. Everybody doesn't have that luxury.
No.
But people, I had a very, very strong community. And they took care of all those little details. As a matter of fact, that I basically just had to show up for his funeral, which I found that even hard to do. Everybody had already left for the funeral. And they had one of my best friends was sitting with me. So her job was to either come with me to the funeral if I decided to come, or to sit home with me if I didn't come. And I was telling her, like, why is everybody still going? Like, his mother's there's not going to be any funeral. It was like I was in denial. Like, if I didn't go, it wasn't going to happen.
Right.
And then the doctor had prescribed me medication to get through the funeral, but I didn't want to be a zombie. I wanted to be in my right mind so that
still be there.
I could accept that this was it, not sit through it and not even know that I was there. So eventually, of course, I went and to say my goodbyes, and I was so happy, even in that moment, how the community showed up. The church was so filled that downstairs was filled, upstairs was filled, outside was filled. There was only standing room only. And because I'm a minister, but a lot of the clergy wasn't there because of me. They were there because of him and the personal relationship that he had with so many people.
That's so lovely, though.
So that did my heart a little better to make me able to go through it. But what I would tell for people that don't have a massive support system like that is find someone that you can talk to. Don't let people that haven't gone through it.
Yeah.
People grieve differently. So everyone tries to give you the antidote to getting through it or getting over it. But just get somebody that you can talk to. Sometimes you don't need anybody to answer you. You just need to talk because nothing that you say can make a person feel better at that point. Something that people say like, oh, he's in a better place and no more suffering and all that. You know that, but you don't want to hear that right now because the better place for you is with your loved one with you.
That's right.
And then it makes you appreciate life because the first birthday, he died in February. His birthday is in April. So on his first birthday, I called out from work and I was at my sister's house all by myself. Everybody had went to work and did their daily. And I got the thought that I wanted to be with my son on his first birthday in heaven because maybe no one had him a cake, you know, things that you think about. And I was like, I'm going to be with my son today on his birthday. And I went into the kitchen and I poured all my pills into my hand and I was going to take them. And the still voice was like, if you do it, you'll never see him again. And I put the pills back in the bottle and I didn't take my life that day.
Thank goodness.
And, you know, or even though I had so many obstacles in my life, I lived through them. I'm still breathing. I'm still talking. I'm still living.
You're still telling your story.
And I'm still sharing my story to encourage others to live no matter what situations or circumstances you go through. Don't give up. Don't throw in the towel, but live. And I had to give myself permission to live because sometimes you feel guilty that you're still living and the person isn't. Then you would think that, okay, life threw her a big curveball. She's all set now. I'm all good. Oh, no, not all good.
Yeah.
After my son passed away, my apartment didn't burn, but the ones around us did. So, bang, our apartments are condemned.
Oh, and no.
We all gather at the fire station. Red Cross comes, gives us that $7.50, pats us on the back, and says, well, we'll see you later. So I find myself, now I'm homeless. What am I going to do? No renter's insurance. I hadn't thought about renter's insurance. Didn't know what renter's insurance was. So you see, in our community, we've been uneducated about a lot of things. So you assume, oh, I don't own this building. I live in an apartment building. They have to have insurance. Yeah, they do, but it covers them.
The structure. It's just covered. Yeah. And
then they give us our deposits back, tell us there's no more apartment buildings in that apartment. So, and then they had a sister apartment, which is funny. I live in their sister apartment now. And then, but their sister apartment is only for people that are over 55 and have a child that's over 19. Well, that left me out because even though I was 55 years old, my daughter was only 16. She wasn't old enough to live here.
Right.
So then I ended up calling the commissioner and, you know, bringing noise to the community saying this isn't fair that, they just give us back our deposit and say they can't help us, but they must have some other empty apartments in this apartment complex. And if they don't right now, we should be put on ahead of the people that are on the waiting list, because we had apartments no fault of our own, we lost them.
Right.
So it was a couple of months before I moved back into that apartment complex, into another complex. So then you think, okay, you're all set. But in the midst of this, I made a permanent decision while I was in a temporary situation. You know, you feel lonely, you want adult companionship. So I met a man, he seemed like he was wonderful, he had it, you know, and I got married. And then, as soon as I get married, I discover that he's a substance abuser.
Oh, no.
He's an underhead crackhead. So I was like, no, I can't live, you know, I can't live like this. And it was, a lot of people had told me that to marry him. So it was a lot of I told you so's. So,
yeah.
So a backup plan is always listen to your instinct. If a red flags are coming up, believe the red flag. And but I didn't. I was in such a temporary situation. My mind was all over the place.
Yes.
So we got married. We stayed together 3 months. I put him out and
moved on,
and eventually years later we got a divorce. Actually, we got a divorce after my stroke, because I was thinking, oh wait, I'm married to this man, he's my next of kin, I would never want him to have control over my body. So
yes,
the divorce, so that all my assets, everything would go to my daughter. So make sure you have your paperwork in order, especially there's a lot of people that are separated from people for years,
yes,
but have a divorce, and then that person is in charge of what happens to you. Oh, no way. So then you think, okay, you didn't went through the loss of your child. You went through a fire. You didn't had a divorce. Like, what else?
But can I say amen to what you just said? Amen and hallelujah, because I tell people all the time, if you're separated and something happens to you, they still have full reign of what they want to do or can do until you actually have those documents signed for a divorce.
All right, and sometimes
so get that organized.
Just for spite, they do the complete opposite of what your family would want, just because they can.
That's right.
Sure, you get divorced. They're separated for years, and you're like, oh well, you know, it's nothing.
Doesn't matter.
It'd be something if one of you passes away first, and they're in charge of you. So then, after all of this,
years after that, then?
Well, I got a divorce while I was in the hospital.
Oh, okay.
I had a stroke already when I got the divorce.
So how long after your 2009 did you have a stroke?
I didn't have the stroke until 2021.
Okay. Right in the midst of COVID.
Right in the midst of COVID. So then I'm like, life is going great. It's the beginning of
a new chapter
of 2021. Everybody's screaming, this is the year. This is the year. It's going to be different. I'm going to stick to my resolutions. I'm going to do all this. Then bang, one night I have a massive stroke. And
you were a teacher, right, at the time?
Yeah. So. I've been teaching Head Start for over 32 years. So I had went to work and I came home and I met with a group of prospective authors because I was going to have a master class for people who want to write a book. So I was working all that and screaming, this is my year. Yeah, it was my year. Then I had a massive stroke and woke up with one side of my body not being able to move and in excruciating pain. I was in every time they would come to change me, I would already be screaming because the pain was so bad. And in the midst of all that, if you have loved ones in the nursing home, even if it's Aunt Sally, Uncle Joe, go check on them. Because when they can't take care of themselves and they have nobody to come visit them, I had my family. Every time something went wrong, I went on Facebook and I blew up their spot. And they didn't like me because of that. But I said, if you would rectify the situations, I just don't go on Facebook and make up stories. I'm telling about things that actually are happening to me. That people, you said, when Good Samaritan Hospital called you, you said you had the facility to take care of me. You knew that I was a two-person assist. Y'all said y'all, when y'all took my insurance money, y'all said y'all could do it. But now, when y'all are short-staffed, who is suffering? Me. I'm laying in the bed, not able to move or go to the bathroom, and I'm laying in my own urine and feces for over 72 hours. Who would you do? Would you let that happen to your parents? They sell it. They giving us rotten fruit. I'm allergic to mushrooms, and they put mushrooms in on one of my dishes. Oh. And I called the nurse, and she saw the big mushroom. So when she went down to the cook, he called me a liar. He's like, she's a liar. Now, why would I lie and say there's mushrooms in my soup if there's no mushroom? And she's trying to show him the mushroom, but he doesn't want to come look and say it's not no mushroom. And then when they investigated, he found out that his assistant cook had put mushrooms in the vegetable soup because he had extra mushrooms from the night before. So he put it in the soup. So there was mushrooms. And instead of him coming to apologize, then they're going to put my name special and all these things. And then I didn't trust them. I was like, if they know what food is mine and he's mad at me for getting in trouble, they could do anything to my food. And so my daughter started bringing me food, but you could only bring food for 3 days at a time. And my daughter lived 45 minutes away. It was two train rides and a bus for her to get to the hospital. So in the midst of all that, I still, you know, was speaking out for people who couldn't speak for themselves. And they were basically like, mind your business. But I was like, no, if y'all are treating me like this and I can talk and I have family, what are y'all doing to the
poor? For those that don't.
That can't speak out, that don't have family, that don't have anybody to check on them. So I advise anyone that if you have family and you just have to put them in a nursing home, don't abandon them there. Go and check on them. Make sure that they're being changed regularly and they're eating what they're supposed to eat. Don't let the hospital believe that they don't have anybody. So even if you have to put someone in a nursing home, always have a backup plan that someone will be able to go and visit with them. Like I said, they were still horrible and I could talk. Yeah. And that they were mad about. And I would tell them, I was like, why are you mad? Because I'm exposing y'all. If it wasn't happening, if I wasn't laying here for 72 hours with no diaper change. And at one point I heard a woman say, well, if they move you to another floor, then Alma's not going to get changed.
Yeah. I had a client in the same predicament, so you're not the only one.
Right.
He had a stroke after falling off a ladder. And he had hit his head, had a stroke, and then after 2 or 3 years, got cancer. And he was put, she had to work, his wife, so they would come and pick him up and take him to daycare and then bring him back. And he hadn't been changed all day long. So it happens. These things happen. And that's so thank you for mentioning that to people, because I don't think people are aware. They just think, oh, like when you put your kid in daycare, they're looked after. Not all the time.
Right. And even in some daycares, like I used to always tell my coworkers that we knew when we took this job that it's a low-paying job. You're not going to make millions of dollars working here. But for me, the satisfaction was I love seeing children coming in as blank canvases and leaving out as beautiful pictures. So I love what I do, but I would tell people all the time, if you don't like it, it's not like you're making boxes. You're making people's lives. Yeah. So if you're unhappy here, don't stay here. Get another job, because you're going to have, in our life and what we do, we're going to have effect on children. Make it a positive one rather than a negative one. And the children that we work with come from disadvantaged backgrounds. So a lot of them have been through enough already that they want some love from someone, and we have to be the someones that show them love and compassion. And I have children. I was doing this for over 30 something years. So I still have children who contact me on Facebook. I have parents who tell me on the days that the day their child is graduating, 12 years after I had them, they call me up and say, thank you. Their experience with you made them their school years wonderful, because their first experience with school was with you. So I tell people that, you know, and the same thing in the nursing home industry, you're not making boxes, you're making people. So you got to leave your feelings at the door. You got to leave what you might have been through at the door and go in and give them the best care that you can, because, you know, elderly people, this is the end stage of their life. You want the end stages of their life to be filled with negativity? No. And through all of this, through all the things that I've been through, what I learned is never give up. Never give in or never give out. Don't throw in the white towel. Don't wave the white flag. That there's still life inside of you, that no matter what situation or circumstance you find yourself in, you can't put your purpose on pause. You still have purpose as long as there's breath in your body. That every time, this is how I compare my life. Now, have you ever been to a carnival?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Did you see that clown that you throw the ball at it and it goes back and you think you won?
Yeah.
And then the clown bounces back up again.
Yes.
Well, they put something in that clown that makes it bounce back up again. Well, God has placed something back in me I call the bounce back spirit. Everything that I go through, life seems like it's knocked me down. Life seems like it's over, throw in the towel. And just when life turns its back and looks around again, the shout victory, they won, I won, I won, I bounce back up again like that clown. So
absolutely,
have the bounce back spirit in your life, that whatever you go through in life, and yeah, sometimes you're going to bend. You're going to bend a little bit. But don't break.
Yeah, yeah.
Reach beyond the break and hold on, because change is going to come.
It's coming.
No test lasts forever. Every test has an expiration date. So we take the test in life and we learn the lessons that we're supposed to learn. Like, I'll never be without renter's insurance again. I'll never be without life insurance again. I'll never stay married to someone that I'm not in love with because of these experiences I went through and the lessons I learned. The lessons, some of the lessons was hard and they were difficult, and I wish I had gone through them.
I don't think any lessons are easy, Alma.
But in going through these lessons, I learned my own strength. When I thought that I didn't have it, like from the very first event in my life when my son passed away, I was like, there's no way I'm going to make it through this. There's no way I'm going to see them throw dirt on my baby's face.
Yeah. And
oftentimes you think, oh, they're cold and they're lonely. And I had all those thoughts. But once I made it through that, the worst thing that can happen in my life, the fire wasn't that bad. The divorce wasn't that bad. The stroke even wasn't that bad because I had already survived the worst time of my life. So anything else come my way is nothing that I can't make it through. And it's something that you can't make it through. That even when it seems like the situation is too much, be like the eagle. Like the eagle never attacks its prey on the prey's ground. They always rise above it. So you can rise above every circumstance that you're going through.
Even though, let's be honest, we do not feel strong in those times.
No. We? No, you don't.
So many people say, oh, you're strong, Tina or Alma. You're strong. You can do this. Or you're strong. I'm like, yeah, no, I don't feel strong at all.
Right, I'm like, you see me going through it. You see me striving through it. But I've had some weak moments. I've had some moments when I said, why me? But you know what? I didn't stay at the pity party.
Yeah.
All these things were invited to the pity party, and I didn't attend. After a while, I didn't go to the pity party anymore, feeling sorry for myself. What I did was enhance the things that I could do. Okay, I can't walk, but I can still talk. I can still share my story. I can still inspire others by just looking at me and seeing that I'm still going, that I'm not laying here wallowing in my own pity. Woe is me, but I'm moving on. I've written, since I had the stroke, I've written a book, Surviving a Stroke Against All Odds, that is with the editor now being edited.
That's so exciting.
So it's going to come out soon. I have t-shirts out for people who are supporters of me that say I'm the friend, I'm favorite because I'm a friend of a stroke victim. Or the one that says I'm blessed because I'm the friend of a stroke victim. With my book is also coming out, 30 Days of Healing Scriptures that people can read while they're going through and write down their feelings. And right now, because I've been through so many things, that I'm coaching people that want to write a book and don't know where to start. I'm going to have a masterclass on writing a book. And then if they want further help from me, then I'm going to be coaching them through writing their book and journaling their feelings and finding ways in which to survive. One of the ways in which I really, really coped was writing down everything that I was going through. So with my first, my second book, From the Waiting Room to the Recovery Room, that book I started writing when the doctor said to me, we did all we can do, we can't, we lost them. And I started writing that book, and that it helped me through. And while I was in the hospital, and the nurse, when I was in a nursing home, I began writing Surviving a Stroke Against All Odds. The original name of the book was Surviving a Stroke and Living Through Park Avenue, but I changed the name to Against All Odds. I'm still telling the story. Make sure you're there for your loved ones, because elder care just isn't as important. I guess if you can't vote, then you're not important if you're not a voter. So
I like that first title. That has a ring to it.
Yeah, so that's the title.
That's cute.
Alma,
what do you, that's wonderful to hear that you're helping and able to help other people do that. What kind of goals other than that do you have in the next couple years for yourself?
Well,
walking and...
Yeah, my number one goal is to walk again and to be able, even though now on Facebook and everything, you can reach all corners of the world, but I want to go to physical events and tell people about the miracle that I went through, from the doctors telling me that I only had a 10% chance of living to me living again. And not just living, not just surviving, but living.
You yes.
can be a survivor or you can be living, and that's taking advantage of all that life has to offer you.
Yes. So you'd like to do some speaking engagements, I assume, then?
Yes.
Yes. Well, that sounds awesome. Let's all make sure Elma can get there, because I think you'd be super at it.
Thank you. Thank you.
What other goals do you think you would have after all of this? For yourself, like just for, like, how's your heart doing now, and how's your blood pressure and everything doing?
My blood pressure is under control because I have a machine that's hooked up that I take my blood pressure once a day, and it goes straight to the doctor. And if it's high or it's low or whatever, they call and the doctor comes. The doctor comes to my house. So my blood pressure, but what one of my goals is to take better care of me than I found that before the stroke, I had little pieces of me all over the place, but everybody else came before me. I thought it was selfish to take off a day, not worry about the kids, let them figure out who's going to be in the classroom, and take off a day just for me, for self-care, to go to the spa or get my nails done, or even so many doctor's appointments I canceled because there was no
one. You had to work.
Yeah, there was no one in the classroom with the kids. But everybody else, whenever they had something to do, they would take off. And they would just say, oh, we know Alma's going to be there. We know Alma's going to be there. But now I permanently can't be there because I've decided that even when I can walk, I'm not going back to work.
Yeah. Well, that type of work.
Right.
You're going to do a different
while going
work.
To writing and speaking and consulting. But, you know, I won't be directly in charge of little kids.
Yeah.
Anymore. Yeah. So,
yeah, I bet you'll miss that though.
Yes, I'll always go visit. Matter of fact, like I told you, they come here, they come to visit me, they call me. So I always have kids in my life because I just love them. I used to, that the reason why I was so committed to my job is because I love the kids. But in the midst of loving the kids, I have to love myself too. I won't be there for the kids. It's just like in April when I had the stroke, we had just went back to work after being out and virtual because of COVID. So I had just went back to work, and just like that, I was out. So the kids had, because I wasn't taking care of myself, the kids had to live without me because I couldn't go to work.
So
take care of yourself. Don't think it's selfish to take care of yourself And if you need to talk to someone, talk to someone, because it's okay not to be okay. Because if you know anything about the African-American community and church community, they think that mental health is taboo, that if they slap a little oil on you and pray for you, you're going to be all right.
But it all goes away mysteriously.
But you have to, in order for it to go away, you have to deal with the root cause. Then a little bit of oil on your forehead is not going to make it go away. So you have to be able to deal with those problems. And it's okay to say, hey, I'm not okay. I need to talk to someone. Every pastor is not equipped to deal with your emotions, your emotional state. So go to someone who is able to help you out of that stage. Because when you go through grief, if you get stagnated in any one of those stages, then you're stagnated, and that's when a lot of people commit suicide or committed to mental health institutions because they thought it wasn't okay. It was something wrong with having to take medication. Like, you'll take your high blood pressure medicine, but your depression medicine, your anxiety medicine, they tell you, throw it away. Jesus is going to help you, and slap some oil on you. And then you're wondering why Jesus is not helping me. Like, you're making the situation worse because now I'm going through all of this and you're telling me that I'm supposed to be okay. Jesus is supposed to help me, but he gave the doctors all the knowledge to help you. So go tell somebody, I'm not okay. Take this S off my chest and let me deal with what I'm going through.
I think that's lovely because, you know, even celebrities, it doesn't matter who you are, they all seem to have difficulties, and those that do, and they go get help in and out. But then just when you think they're okay, or they think they're okay, something else happens. So I don't know what the reasoning around that is, like Amy Winehouse and Michael Jackson and Robin Williams. And I mean, there's so many celebrities that have had a difficult time and went and got help. But then it just, you need that continual help, I think, no matter. Right. Yeah, it just doesn't stop because you think you're feeling better.
Right. It doesn't. It's just like if they give you antibiotics, they tell you finish the whole bottle.
Yeah. Like,
once you start feeling well, don't stop taking the pill. But it's okay. It's like once you start feeling better, don't stop talking to people. Don't stop telling people that I hurt inside and I feel like nobody understands. Because people, like I said, people go through things in a different way. So they tell you what works for them may not work for you.
Yeah. Are you able to get up and do anything, like go to church or do anything at all, Elma?
No, I do all that on
online?
On Zoom, yeah.
Well, that will be exciting when you can, though, won't it?
Yes.
So the first step is to get in mobility onto a wheelchair and get out, and then gradually move from that?
Yes.
And how does you're feeling better that way now? You're not in pain and...
Oh, yes. No, the pain. I was like so amazed when one day I didn't feel the pain anymore. And I was like, is this true? is it over? But I didn't feel the pain that I was feeling, and they were able to change me without me screaming out in pain. So like I said, the feeling is slowly coming back. The pain is no longer there. So Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to just better days.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So it does come slowly, but it comes, right?
Right. It's not gonna be some people after a stroke they get up and you know they walk away, but then there's some people that go through the process of relearning how to walk, retraining your brain to tell your right side work. You know, yeah. You still got life in you.
Did it hurt? Was it like immediate pain, or could you have told someone what was happening when it happened?
Well, yeah, I told people what was happening while it was happening, and the pain just got intensely worse after I got to the hospital.
So in a time frame of an hour, it just progressively got
really, yes.
But luckily you got there in time and they were able to. That's awesome. Can you imagine being some people like, wasn't it, trying to think of his name from Three's Company. He hadn't been feeling good all week.
Right. Oh, yeah. I don't know. It's real. Jack Ripper.
Yeah.
But that's his show name.
Yeah. But yeah, that's what I had heard, that he had not been feeling good. Like we sometimes don't feel good. And he just put it down to that. And then one day just had a massive stroke or heart attack. I'm not sure which, but.
Right.
Yeah. So we do have to watch ourselves and watch our health and be kinder to ourselves. I think for women, though, moms particularly feel very selfish about thinking of ourselves.
Right.
I'm not sure where that comes from, but it's around the world, I'm sure. It's somehow when you think, I'm just going to sit on the couch and watch movies all day or whatever suits your fancy that day, just a time out. I think we need it.
Right, we need it, and we say like, oh, I can be folding clothes, I can be cleaning up or whatever, and your mind is going 20 things you could be doing, but you know, you need to take that time just to debrief from your busy life. You know, while the kids are at school, just do nothing. If that makes you happy, stay in bed all day, that makes you happy. You just need to do something.
That makes you happy.
That makes you happy. That's for you.
Yeah. Whether it's walking on a trail or hiking or writing a book, starting writing your book or starting a little business on the side or calling friends or going get your fingernails done or whatever it might be.
Right.
Yeah, we forget those things when we have children, don't we? Just
yeah.
It's somehow they come first and we come last. Not sure why that happens that way, but I think the younger generation has it a little bit better that way.
Right.
I wouldn't say they're selfish, but they do think of themselves a lot more than I know our generation did.
Right.
Do you find that too, talking
to? Yeah, it's like the young parents that we have, you know, they're dropping their kids off and going to the gym. They're dropping their kids. If they're not going to work, they're dropping their kids off and they're going to the movies or whatever. They're like, okay, you know, here's my cell phone number. If it's an emergency, call me. But, you know, I'm off today, so I'm doing me. And, yeah. You know, they do that. You know, they're not worried about running home to cook dinner, this and that. They're doing things for themselves, which is, you know, good.
Yeah.
Thought that, you know, that self-care at a young age, taking care of you. So, because you know that are less than you're the best you version of yourself. You can't take care of anyone else. That's why, you know, we get burnt out so quickly, because we're burning the candle and each end and in the middle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Burn out.
Well, and it hurts our relationships outside and inside the family. It hurts our self.
Right.
Our health, and just it hurts a lot of things that for some reason our generation, we must not, our moms must have taught us differently.
Right.
I'm not sure what they taught us, but they taught us to keep working, and that were, I guess you weren't anything unless you kept working. I don't know.
I know that family comes first.
Yes. Yes.
Come last.
Yes. Isn't that funny how that happened, isn't it?
Yes.
Did you have any final messages for the listeners?
Yes, my final message for the listeners is that remember that you can't put your life on pause, that matter, no matter what you're going through in life, that you still have purpose. Don't put off for tomorrow what you can do today, because tomorrow is not promised to you. So like you said, if you want to start that business, you want to write that book, you want to write that song, whatever, you want to go back to school, you're never too old to go back to school, whatever it is that you want to do, don't say, I'm going to do it tomorrow, or I'm going to do it next year. The next tomorrow's not promised. Next year is definitely not promised. So do whatever you can now. No matter what situation you're in, there's still purpose in you. There's still more life in you. So prepare for the worst, but live your best life.
Oh, I couldn't have said it any better. Amen. Amen to that. That's beautiful. That is beautiful. I couldn't have said it any better myself, because I say that kind of thing so many times to people. You know, you're not Superman, so don't think you are, because you don't know what's around the corner.
Right.
You really don't. And when it hits you in the face, I always laugh and say Mike Tyson says, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. And that's so true, because I guess your plan wasn't really a plan, because what do you, you know, I'm thinking of fighting. I'm not a fighter, but I imagine that you're having to have another plan in case this happens, or if this happens, or if that happens. So that's how we need to live our lives too, if just in case.
Just in case they tell you if plan A doesn't work, try plan B. But even if plan B doesn't work, then try C, D, and E.
Don't That's right.
Just have one thing. Like, this is going to happen. I know it's going to happen. And that's it. And then when life, the storms of life come, like there's some little storms, but there's some big storms, like Superstorm Sandy. We wasn't prepared for what the damage that Superstorm Sandy was going to do. So be prepared for the worst case scenario. And then when anything less than that happens, you breathe in like, whew, that's great, because yeah, it could have been this bad. But then you're prepared. You have your extra water. You have your extra food, and you're prepared for whatever happens. So be that way in life. Prepare. Yeah. It's just like, I don't know, in Canada, when they say it's going to be a snowstorm, does everybody run to the store and get bread, milk, and eggs?
Not really, unless they... I'm trying to think of, I think they say a big storm might be coming. It could be rain, it could be flooding, it could be snow, or I know back east, like Quebec or Ontario, they have a lot of ice storms, so they can't get around in that. But we're having tornadoes now in Canada, and I don't think we've had hurricanes, but we've had a lot of wildfires. British Columbia, up from Seattle, that whole coast is just rampant of wildfires. So, yeah, people go running out for that because they have to have a plan. And sometimes an evacuation, 5-minute evacuation notice, doesn't give you a whole lot of time to get anything.
Get anything. As I said, well, in America, when it's gonna snow, when you go to the supermarkets, you can't find any bread, milk, or eggs, because whenever they say it's gonna be a bad snowstorm, I don't know why people have to make sure they have bread, eggs, and milk.
Yeah.
And so you prepare for a storm by getting your bread, eggs, and milk. So in life, you gotta prepare for a storm by making sure that you have those.
Your eggs, milk, and bread.
Yeah, that you have your insurance and things of that nature that you're prepared. So, you know, life is what you make it. It can either make you bitter or better. Like, you can laugh about these things now because you chose to be better. I chose to be better. I chose not to be bitter. I chose not to say, woe is me. Why me? Why me? Why not me?
Yeah.
Why not me? So all these things, different things are going to happen to different people at times, but it's not, it'll happen to you and not to me. It's not discriminatory. It can happen to anyone.
And I think what's so crazy, too, is that you sometimes think, oh, woe is me, until you meet somebody else that's way worse, and then you think, oh, my God, I don't know I have it so good.
Right. You know, like, you ever heard of the story that the man was complaining that he had no shoes until he met the man that had no legs?
Yeah, I love that one. Isn't that the truth?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to have you come back, Alma, and tell us all about your new ventures out, getting out of that room that you've been stuck in for a few months at a time.
Okay.
I'd love to see your progress, and I'm sure our listeners would too. Maybe we can come full circle around at this again in the summertime or something.
Right, and I can let you know about where I'm at now and what I'm doing and how I got up out of this bed and out of this house.
Yes, I'm sure you're so excited to do that, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes, I'm sure you are. And luckily, you have your wonderful daughter. She's a godsend for you, and your community and your friends.
Yes, yes. I couldn't have made it this far without my community, and especially without my baby girl.
Yeah, yeah. So there are miracles.
Yes.
Even though we don't see any at the time sometimes. Well, everybody, I can't imagine saying goodbye to Alma, because it's been a wonderful hour that we've spent, and so much information Alma has for us. Thank you so much, Alma, for coming on our show. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me onto your platform and allowing me to share my story. If just one person is encouraged and inspired by my story to make it one more day, then all I've been through isn't in vain.
Yes, I say that too. I say, if I just help one person, that's what we're here for. And hopefully you can be super busy as you wish to be, in helping people write their next book.
Yes.
That would be wonderful to see. That makes you want to get up in the morning, doesn't it?
Yes, it makes me want to just help someone tell their story, because each of our stories is unique, and there's somebody out there waiting to read each and every one of our stories to inspire them that they can make it one more day.
Yes. And it's not like you're old or anything and you wonder, you know, I'm sure you wondered, I'm not old. Like, what the heck? Why did this happen?
Right.
Right? Because how many times, you know, back in the Waltons' day, did they have sick people around in that TV show? And they were mainly what we considered old.
Right.
And so it happens anytime. I think there's people with strokes at 20 and 30.
There are. There's some, I'm in some stroke groups, and there's people that had strokes as babies.
How is that possible?
I don't know. It was a baby. There was a couple of men, he was said he had his stroke at 2 years old.
Oh, can you imagine the poor parents to figure that one out?
Yes, and he was like that, because he was saying someone asked, because they said that the diagnosis, the prognosis after you had a stroke, and he was saying that he had it at 2, and he was now 30, so that, you know, 28 years after, you know, and he's, you know, he doesn't have any residual effects of the stroke he had it to.
Oh, well, that's because of our great medical systems that we have.
Yeah,
in this lifetime now than what we had years and years and years ago. I'm sure we can thank that, the health system, for that.
Yes.
But thank you. Thank you, Elma. Thank you, listeners, for coming on. I'm so happy to be here with Elma today from New York and telling her story of craziness, really. I mean, some people, I say to people, you're going to get hit with something. We just don't know when and we don't know what, but I don't say we're going to keep getting hit by something. It's like, you know, what happened to you. It's a really crazy story. And I love how you're sharing it with everybody to help others be inspired as well.
Thank you.
And let's all pray for Elma to get out there and get in that wheelchair and really start walking soon. I can feel it coming, Elma.
Amen.
So everybody, thank you so much. I've changed my beginning and I've changed my end to my show after 4 years. I think we're always growing and always wanting to improve and just, we don't feel it anymore, so to speak. So thank you for everybody for coming on. And if you already haven't, subscribe to our channel down here in the corner so that you can get notified for more great guests like Elma. And share it. Share it with other stroke survivors. Share it with your family and friends. Share it with your community so that if you know somebody who is struggling with a stroke or with a homelessness or divorce or anything, then I'm sure Elma has touched on that in our show today. So thank you, everybody, for coming on to our show. We delve deep into real people conversations about life-changing events on our show. And we believe that preparation, whether financial, spiritual, or physical, can truly transform your perspective, like Elma says. Join us for candid discussions like this, where we share insights and tips, strategies and stories that inspire preparedness and, of course, their new journey. And thank you for coming on. We're not just facing the unexpected, we're embracing it with resilience and a whole lot of heart. So cheers to preparedness and living life on your terms. Thank you for coming. Thank you, Elma, for coming. Thank you. And till next time, stay safe and be kind. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.